Welcome to the Rooted in Change podcast.
Hey everyone, my name is Jan and you're listening to the Rooted in Change podcast. This show features European clean tech champions and their solutions to tackle the climate crisis. Today's guest is Mariam, founder and CEO of Plank. Energy storage is a recurring theme on this show and we've covered several solutions already. Today, we're diving into the intersection of advanced materials and energy storage. I'm excited to welcome Mariam and we'll be able to talk about this. I'm excited to welcome Mariam, who will be able to give us more background on this. Welcome.
Thank you.
My first question to my guest is always, what's your background? So same question to you, Mariam. Who are you as a person? What's your background?
Yeah. I'm born and raised in Iran in a big family. So I had 4 siblings. Mm-hmm. My parents were engaged with our studies. I was a good student in class, always a top student, and I was always also encouraged by my parents to kind of do extraordinary activities and mm-hmm. Work on English language and other things to prepare for university. It's tough to get into university, at least at my time, because had a competition with 400,000 other students in mathematics and physics to get into engineering schools. Wow. And so I studied very hard, my time, the 17th year of my life was just the day and night studies. Wow. I got into the best school and studied chemical engineering. So, because of engagement of my parents and also kind of they walking the talk, it really helped me also to kind of build this character that I wanted to reach my goals. I defined my goals to be motivating me to push harder. And also they empowering me and cheering for me helped a lot.
Yeah, I can imagine that makes a whole lot of difference sort of to have that support around you from an early age and pushing you to aim for the best and aim for the highest.
Yeah, you also see from people around you. My parents, my father, he studied in something related to his job. He was a police officer, but mm-hmm. then he had multiple hats and he also was active in property business. In this sense, he wanted to kind of build a strong base economically for the family. So he was quite active. And then he also went back to school late. He's now in his 60s. So he mm-hmm. went back to university, studied law. He's now graduating Master's of Law. Kind of close to 70-year-old.
Wow, that's super cool.
So this is quite inspiring for me. And this is what I'm trying to do and showcase to my child, that it's about your goals and there is no deadline. So it's you define what you want to reach and work towards that.
Yeah, what a great personal story to start this with, and sort of to get an understanding of this lifelong learning journey as well. Really inspiring.
Yeah, and you know how we see that, you know, people are going different pathways in their lives, but this is because of every happening in their lives, their childhood, who they are surrounded with, their network, and the inspiration they can get from others. When I look back, I see these points as inspirations. Mm-hmm. When I was in bachelor studies, we had a professor who was studying one of the very good universities in the US, and he was encouraging us to kind of build a country to kind of develop more. And when some of the students were commenting that, they're not good quality jobs, he criticized that viewpoint and that approach. And he said that you need to create jobs. Right. So this was always in back of my head that if there's no way, so you need to build it.
Right. Yeah, so if the path doesn't exist, you have to shape it yourself. And how did that sort of study period then lead you to where you are today with Planck? Sort of what were the steps in between?
After my master's, I got a temporary job, and then I was also motivated to kind of build. So I established a company right after my master's together with one of my professors. But then understood that it's not like that easy with the bureaucracy, and like the infrastructure was not there. And then I decided that I need to also become stronger. I wanted to apply for PhD positions, and did that for some of the US US universities, also one in Norway, which was actually not really planned. It was like through a friend that I got to know about this professor and this PhD position. And then when I consulted one of my professors, then he suggested that I should go for this professor wherever he is in the world, because he was quite well known in the field. So I came to Norway, studied my PhD in process control, and then had a postdoc period in RWTH Aachen, Germany, and started work in Statoil back then, Equinor now, which is the energy company in Norway. So it was like a shift from academia to industry, but then I could also see that like my knowledge needed in industry. I was respected, and my opinion mattered a lot, and that was very good. Tried to implement my PhD topic for Equinor. We did it for a CO2 capture unit, optimizing a CO2 capture unit by designing a control structure, running the plant energy optimal. And then the last 5 years in Equinor, I was in the innovation department. I was responsible for an innovation portal where everyone in the company registered their ideas. And in our department, technology innovation, we were helping to kind of start from technology idea to projects, handing over to research departments, also collaborating with external consortiums on relevant technology ideas to Equinor. This was really interesting. It was like not only technology implementation, but also at a higher level. And this actually gave me a lot of insights. So I worked with different topics within CO2 capture, hydrogen, e-fuels. I was involved in technology strategy and roadmap for the company. And actually kind of seeing everything from a higher level, a bit like less dependent on like a specific technology, but rather working on what is required and like thinking from the problem side. And so that was really enlightening.
Right, so
And
if I can rephrase this, what you did was sort of the you looked at the problem that needed to be that needed solving, and then instead of focusing on one technology, because that was sort of what where you had your personal connection to, maybe would have been the company, and obviously then you're dependent on this one technology. You instead had the well the privilege, I guess, to choose from an array of technologies, whatever then suited best for the problem that you were looking at. Did I get that right?
Yeah, so we both collaborated with the operations part, kind of getting the technology need from their side, and also collaborating with the overall technology strategy of the company, which was actually put forward by the chief researcher and the technical experts. And then we in the innovation group, together with our colleagues from different research departments, collaborated on which technology development should be prioritized.
Gotcha. And then what was the step to, well, founding your own company?
Yes. So then I was involved in one project, which was about materials. It was a technology mapping project. And then I was actually also interested personally in the material space, more specifically on nanotechnology. Like the first years of my work at Equinor, I took my vacation time to go to workshops because it wasn't relevant to my daily job. And then I went to some nanotechnology workshops. Not super easy to, you know, grasp all the details there, but kind of learned how is the basics. I took some courses on quantum mechanics. And then, so that was like the basis, which helped me with my chemical engineering knowledge and that technology mapping project. Like this specific project was pitched by one of the colleagues with a background in gas trading and wanted that Equinor kind of evaluates these type of materials for gas storage. Then I became the project leader for that and collaborated with my colleagues in the expert center. And then we had some suggestions for the company. Also, we went into one external consortium, collaborated on a specific use case on that. And then I felt that I wanted to kind of be also more hands-on working on this topic. And that's that kind of led me to establishing the company, kind of leaving my job. Mm-hmm. Very good memories from my job, but then also enjoying actually building these solutions and then offering it to energy companies.
Right. And then, well, let's dive into what it is that you're actually doing at Planck now. So in a nutshell, how would you describe, well, the maybe first the problem that you're solving and then, you know, what is it that you offer?
Yeah. So since I was involved in energy storage and I could see the need for energy storage, then we are focusing on energy storage now. Our vision is to make the chemical energy storage more efficient and cost effective. The energy storage is much needed in the net zero transition mission. And we need this because, like, as we are introducing renewable energy because of the supply-demand mismatch and because of the grid capacities, we have curtailment. We see that, like, people see that in their electricity bills. It's the prices are oscillating a lot. And some of these renewable energy are lost because of these issues. So that's why we need energy storage, and not all the energy can be in the form of electrons. So we are also used to have them in the form of molecules. That's why producing chemicals is a topic that is considered. And some renewable plants are
especially in the industrial applications, right? Like, because sort of in the on the consumer side of things, this is where storing energy in form of electricity makes a whole lot of sense, because with mobility and, you know, heating and so on, all moving to become electrically powered, this is fine. But in industrial applications, you still need, as you mentioned, molecules. So I guess this is where there's a distinct shift, right?
Also in the mobility business, there are, for example, the hydrogen-driven cars. In South Korea and like the in the Southeast Asia, there are more infrastructure on that, hydrogen refuel stations. And also I'm hearing about the like e-fuels like ESAF and even hydrogen-driven airplanes. Mm-hmm. So this is coming, but then, of course, hydrogen is a difficult gas to work with. Storage and transport of that is difficult, but then there are solutions being developed for this. So like the whole goal for us is to kind of reduce the levelized cost and kind of optimize the system so that the round-trip efficiencies become better. Because in comparison to batteries, still some way to go. And then when I was studying, since I was studying in process control department, we were working on like optimizing an existing plant. And then we had this statement was from my professor that we cannot make a Ferrari out of Volkswagen. So our job was to kind of make a Volkswagen to do their best and the Ferrari to do their best. But then like what if to kind of work on the design of systems and make them Ferrari to start with.
Gotcha. And what? How do you do that then? How do you turn the Volkswagen into a Ferrari?
Yeah, so we're working on the material space. From my experience, I could see that like material innovations are from like the material scientists and chemists, sometimes detached from the applications. And so like the chemists, they're doing great jobs, but they're also focusing on the properties of the materials in the scale of, in the nanoscale or in the material level. And what we do is that like we match the materials for different use cases. We are working on materials discovery. It's like drug discovery for humans that has been around. And we do the material discovery for energy storage applications. And like we are labeled as chemistry AI company by Hitachi in their market map report.
Right. So how does your business then operate? Will this always be sort of a R&D focused operation, and then you, once you find materials that are suitable for applications, what's the process behind that? Yeah. How does that look?
Good question. There are some companies who are working more on a platform, kind of working more on the AI methods to do the calculations faster, and focusing more on like the horizontal level. And we are working more vertical, so we have chosen energy storage and even narrowed down right now into gas storage and gas separation. So the product of this is like what we go to the market with. And we have now worked on like these topics and have a patent that we want to kind of take that to the market and collaborate with industry players to implement them.
Okay. And who would your ideal customers then be, so who would buy your solution?
Yes, the energy companies, utility companies, those who are dealing with gas, even shipping industry. We have talked to several clients from all different branches, and we have seen the interest. So we have already one client who is a company who wants a solution on CO2 capture, and working with another client on Power2X, like the buffer storage of gas, and also like the gas separation. These are the use cases that we work with these clients on.
Okay. And you mentioned sort of the other companies in the space who focus maybe more on horizontal applications, whereas you chose this vertical approach and do energy storage, and then specifically within the energy storage, gas storage and separation, as you mentioned. What do you do differently compared to other players out there? Or the question sort of from a different perspective is, you mentioned that you will sell to, you know, energy companies, utilities, and so on. And also coming from your own background with Equinor, for example, they have, I would assume, massive R&D teams and, you know, massive engineering power in-house. So why does it need you? Sort of what is the secret sauce that you bring to the table that they don't have, or what, you know, why do they need you?
So compared to other chemistry AI companies, since we focus on the application, so then we dig more into the requirement in a system level, and we integrate the system models into the material discovery part, like the availability of the infrastructure and the utility. And like, you know, that can also have an impact on the choice of the materials and kind of bring in the optimal system based on advanced materials, which is fit for purpose. And then, yes, there are big companies with also R&D teams. We need to kind of focus on what is the core technology and the core delivery, core business of those companies. So for, like you mentioned, Equinor, energy companies, their job is to produce energy. And it's a lot around that. They are also dependent on suppliers. Then we are one of the technology companies who can help with more efficient gas storage and separation. and we need to also collaborate. So it's like a value chain that, you know, we need to collaborate with all the stakeholders in the value chain to kind of bring in a solution to the market. And we don't want to kind of be in the research side. That's why we don't want to be horizontal. The chemistry AI companies could deliver to experimentalist researchers, because these solutions that we're working with, it reduces a lot of trial and error. It helps with kind of searching and a wider database of materials with less effort and less cost in the experimentation side. And before, and the issue was that, like, since there was not enough computational power and AI and methodologies were not developed, then it wasn't possible to do this. And so then for a given case, an experimentalist scientist could just trust their own instinct and like literature survey and pick a handful of materials to try with. But then now we can have like a wider selection to kind of choose from and to optimize for a given purpose. And then like we are focusing more on the applications and then a handful of applications that, you know, we can really bring to the market, because me and co-founder both have the chemical engineering background and we have worked in the industry. So for us, kind of bringing solution to the market is important.
Right. I'm just going to paraphrase that to make sure I get everything that you say. So why it needs you is because you're so specialized, right? Sort of the, and in a value chain approach, you will always, there will always be space for you because you bring that specialized knowledge that no one else has, sort of not even then the big players, because you are so special. And I guess what makes you stand out is that domain expertise within energy storage.
Yeah.
And then I would just want to touch upon what you said about the sort of the AI mechanisms. So we haven't touched upon this fully, so maybe we can go there quickly as well. But what you're saying is sort of in the past, the engineers relied more or less on their experience, sort of having a feeling, a gut feeling of which materials might be the right ones to investigate, and, you know, relying on research and you know, articles and so on to inform that choice. But ultimately, sort of that was experience based, and therefore also limited, because the bandwidth, the human bandwidth is limited, and also the experimentation bandwidth is limited, right, because that takes time. But now with the help of AI, you're able to sort of supercharge that and make that a lot faster, test out different combinations, and also lead to discoveries that sort of have been not on the radar, right? And is this how also you come at the right time with the AI hype now being real? And how do you employ this in your company? How does that look?
Yeah, so we are using some AI methods, like we're using machine learning for estimating some of the material properties. Calculating material properties requires a lot of time. Like there is some equations in physics, you need to kind of solve the Schrödinger equation. You cannot really solve it for anything other than two atoms. So then you need to kind of simplify it by like several simplification methods. But they still take time. You cannot do it for 100,000 different material structures. And then there are like this machine learning based methods that, you know, they can kind of derive insights from the information and from already run simulations and experimental data. So they can kind of make life much easier by using them. And then like this new AI methods, like generative AI, also can be used on another level to kind of bring information on the less quantitative properties. They are like not really well developed yet, but then getting better and better every day. We also kind of see it in the applications which are related to our work. So these are the areas that we work with. We have an advisor from University of Toronto. He's an expert in LLM, and he's also giving guidance to us for the material discovery applications.
Great. sort of now we have an understanding of, you know, your journey, what you do, how your business will work, and what it is that you're doing within your business. How far have you come since starting the company, and what are the next relevant steps? You mentioned the patent earlier, so that's obviously one key milestone.
We have developed a tool, still, of course, working on kind of adding the relevant details. For example, now we're working on a micro level model of the system. And then we have started the patent of our first results, working with potential clients. And then we have seen that, like, our first client and our first contract is in place. And we are working with that.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. And that's quite recent. thanks for that. And so that is like now kind of helps us to kind of focus on this specific use case. And then working also on the next steps, because we have in our roadmap that we want to kind of work on the industrial pilots. So we already have talked to potential candidates on that, have letters of interest from different players working together on that, also with the material manufacturers. So we're trying to kind of build these relations as we need and as we go forward. And also, bring this product to the market.
Very exciting, and again, congratulations on sort of
Thank
well, the
you.
first commercial contract. That's always a big milestone for any young company.
Yeah, we are very happy. It's like a different environment we are in right now. I think maybe some years ago it was not really typical to hear from a deep tech company to have a customer in their like early stage. But I think it's good. I believe really in stakeholder management early on. So kind of building these relations early on with the end users, with those who are kind of will be kind of using these technologies into their assets so that we kind of engage them, we build our solutions towards their needs.
Yeah, I think the sentiment there has really shifted sort of from being able to develop a solution, you know, in your own chambers, for multiple years probably, and then at one point be saying, look, we're 95% ready and bring this to the market, and then the market hasn't been waiting for you, and you know, there's little demand. This is often how deep tech or, you know, research-led companies have operated, to say, look, we need to be it needs to be perfect before we can ship it. And I think what I'm hearing from you is rather going the opposite way, to say, look, we have this deep market understanding. We know the we're coming from the application side, and we need to bring in the stakeholders early on, just to make sure that everyone's interests and everyone's wishes, demands are really aligned. So we actually build a solution that the market wants, and the market gets
Exactly.
what they need, and then also wants to pay for that. So I think that approach is a lot wiser, especially in the current fundraising climate as well, where I think you need to show a lot earlier than before that you have product market fit, and that you're able to to meet that market demand.
So I mean, it's always better to have the pull from the market rather than like be pushing our solutions to the market. And then, you know, it will be collaboration when we deliver something which is needed in the market, then scale up will not be like a very difficult path. So that's our mindset. And of course, it is also like, you know, expectation from the industry is that, like, you know, what is your TRL can be implemented right now. And then, you know, we kind of say the situation transparently that, like, you know, now we have materials synthesized, we have tested some of these materials in the lab scale. So we are like 4 and 5. And of course, testing these materials in an industrial asset kind of brings us to the next level. And there are some front runners in the industry. who kind of welcome this approach. And then some others say that, okay, we wait a little bit more and, you know, right. we catch up in some months.
And then looking forward, what are, I mean, whatever time frame works for you, but sort of in the, maybe the near future, but also in the slightly more distant future, maybe, you know, 3 to 5 years or so. What are the plans for Plank? Where do you want to take the company?
Yeah. So now we have like focus on like some of these use cases. We have collaboration partners in place. We are working together with the research center on testing the materials in the system. And we have ongoing project. We hope that we can go to more clients, engage with more industry players, and also planning already for industrial pilot. So we hope that like in the near future, we can actually start with industrial pilot. And then, really hopeful to kind of bring solutions to the market, which kind of lower the levelized cost of energy storage. And then it's a lot of expansion possibilities. Like when I started from the vision of our company, I talked about energy and like in the form of molecules. So it could be either like in the context of power to X, or it could be any molecules which are produced, for example, also like blue gas that can be stored in a wiser way and a cheaper way. Because we're talking also to shipping companies and like companies who are not necessarily renewables, but then they want to be more efficient and also kind of reduce the carbon footprint. And that's nice.
Yeah, I guess sort of for the way you approach both the problem and the market, there are a lot of adjacent applications, I guess. So sort of it's not just energy storage, I guess. Ultimately, it's sort of about storage, probably, or sort of even compression, if I were to rephrase this. And then, you know, there are tons of applications where your technology could make a difference for whatever the primary reason might be for the buying company, whether it's, if it's a cost part or efficiency part, which often go hand in hand, right? And then sort of the climate impact, especially in today's slightly changed climate, might be secondary, but still a relevant one.
Yeah. So, for example, you mentioned the compressed gas. Yeah. So, if there is a need to store more gas in a container, then like one solution currently in the market is to go to higher compression level, which means that we need to design, like we need to kind of go for higher type of containers, which is like much more expensive. For example, type 4 container is, it's a range, but then it can be 10 times more expensive than type 1, and so which is like for lower pressures. And then also you need to kind of have the compression, which brings you both higher CapEx and higher OPEX. And then our suggestion is that while going to high pressure, risk of leakage is higher, cost is higher, and then also safety concerns, then let's do it in a lower pressure and then more effective by introducing these materials. So we introduce more surface area and then there's less need to go to higher pressure, and then you can store the same amount much cheaper.
Great. I mean, that's a wonderful prospect to be looking forward to.
Yeah.
I'd love to end this conversation going back to your personal journey. So, I mean, you described very vividly how you sort of found your passion for, you know, setting ambitious goals and following through on them, and, you know, from an early age wanting to get into university with a lot of competition, and then you did, and, you know, wanting to do that PhD with one of the most renowned professors in the field, and you did. And then, you know, going for a career in a prestige energy company, followed by for starting to your own company, and so on. So you did a lot of that, which is very inspiring. What is it though that gets you then up in the morning? Because again, you could have lived your nice life in the energy company and did different positions there. There's a lot of different fields to look at. You mentioned sort of where you started, then moved to the innovation side. It's a different life in a startup, right? Because you don't have that sense of security, you don't have as many colleagues, you don't have as many resources, and so on. So it's very, I would assume your life right now, at least in terms of work environment, is very different from your life that you had at Equinor, and just in terms of so many things, right? But what is it that sort of drives you to continue this journey to really get up in the morning, say, look, it's another day at Plank. I'll make the most out of it. What is that?
Very nice point, actually. I guess it's like this mindset in me that, like, what is next? So asking myself all the time, what is next? And I remember, like, once I was checking the career portal of the company I worked for, and like I saw this sentence that, like, those who are kind of going the extra mile, then, they are, like, successful in their career. They can kind of go up in the career ladder. And for me, it was like always I wanted that extra mile in my life, and got inspired from my parents, from, like, them cheering for me. And also, like, whenever I went to a goal, I reached a goal, then I again questioned myself, what is next? And also, like, how can I do here good enough? Like, I was the best in school when I went to university. It was the best university. And then I wasn't best there. Like, how can I kind of, how can I make a footprint here? What should I do differently? Not always, like, by kind of following the crowd, but then for me, it was like, I want to learn as much as possible. And I kind of did extra courses. I took some courses from the master level when I was in bachelor level, some from other departments. And then, always that mindset was in me, like walking the extra mile. I have also recently established a podcast, Extra Milers, that, it's both for me learning what is it. What is that extra mile that we need to go? And also learning together with the audience, with the fellow entrepreneurs, that, what it takes for us. Because entrepreneurship, it requires, like, some characteristics in a person to be in this ground, and also for the company, like, how to kind of define the personal goals, the professional goals, and how to kind of learn from the experts, from those who have gone the extra mile. So that's, like, wakes me up in the morning excited to do what it takes to go to the extra mile, to have a footprint in this world, and to kind of be a good role model also for the next generation, for my daughter. I mean, I'm even more motivated since I became a mom.
Yeah, that's a theme I think that I often hear on the show, sort of as soon as children come into play, that changes the perspective, because it's not just you anymore, but you have the responsibility for someone else, and you need to teach them the world, and therefore you also reflect upon your own impact and the footprint that the work that you can do and want to do, and that changes quite a bit. I also make sure to link to your podcast
Oh, thank you. I can send you
in the
things.
show notes. The question that I would have to end us on is, have you come up with any characteristics that are sort of crucial for entrepreneurial success? Is there anything from the conversations that you had in the past where you say, look, those three things are key for an entrepreneur or an organization to succeed?
Yeah, I think, yeah, several. One is curiosity. That, like, you are looking for new solution. You're not, like, into repairing things and, like, incremental innovation, but, like, more into radical innovation. So then curiosity, like, in a level that, you kind of look for new solutions. Then confidence in believing in yourself, kind of building a team, believing in your team, to kind of build a solution together. It requires teamwork. And then perseverance. That's also very crucial. It's like this life is different, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
I had a comfortable life. I mean, I worked in energy operator. So we were not like, you know, most companies are dependent on two things, like capital and customers. You know, as an energy company, we were not dependent in any of them. So that was a very different life from being in a startup, leading a startup, which we are dependent on both. And it's like crucial to the life of the startup.
Yep.
And so and that's sort like...
of, and the part I think about the startup is also, you're not just dependent on it. I think it's also a lot harder to get access to both of them, both to capital and customers, right? It's sort of you need to to work a lot harder, just to, you need to work a lot harder in order to get there, which is also different compared to established companies where you might have or gain easy access to capital and customers.
I never got a no like in my previous job, but here it was like, I mean, it's different image because I need to kind of build credibility. I need to kind of build the image of the company. So like I went back to school myself. I mean, I have a PhD in process control and then I have years of 10 years of experience from Equinor, kind of both technology implementing, leading projects, and also being like more high level supporting the technology strategy, you know, for different topics. But then I also went back to school to kind of learn systematically leading. So I did programs from Stanford, like a year-long program with LEAD, and also from Harvard, two programs to kind of learn the school level and also very systematically on leadership, on strategy building, and to kind of also help to develop our company and our team systematically from day zero. It takes a lot of effort. And as I said, like, maybe if I want to rank, I don't know how to rank, to be honest, because, you know, it's the several characteristics I mentioned. Yeah. But perseverance is the one that, you know, it kind of takes you to kind of go in the path, because it's crucial the first years. But then when you build your solution, you build the trust, then you have the first customer, the next are coming much easier.
Mm. Yeah. And I think it's the one thing that sort of is the hardest to learn and the easiest to lose almost. Like it, you mentioned the no before, right? To say it's not a lovely situation to be on the receiving end of no's. Like that's not in our human nature. We don't like that.
Not fun.
And it's needed as an entrepreneur. That is your life. Like it's a, hopefully not constant, but at least in the beginning, there's sort of an array of people saying no to you. Whereas curiosity is a, I totally agree. It's a super important one as well. A skill that you might already have. I mean, having been a researcher, sort of that is sparked by curiosity, right? You wouldn't go the academic pathway if you weren't interested in finding out things that no one else knew before. And I think it's a skill that you can learn, asking questions and so on, being interested in your surroundings. But it's different because people tend to give you, tend to speak to you and give you answers, but it's different than buying from you. You might have a nice conversation and still it might not lead to commercial traction. And I think this is sort of where it's more difficult. And
Before coming to this journey, I like heard this roller coaster expression. Mm-hmm. I was supporting our company with Techstar programs. So I was in contact with startup companies there as well. And then like I truly witnessed what it really means. Because like one day you may get a no from a customer that like, you know, they say, oh, I'm going to wait for you to implement this. And so like go to hire TRL. And then the day after we get a lot of attention, thumbs up from a client and also like, you know, invitation to represent our company in different stages. Like recently we were also invited in an event by Innovation Norway and Investinor. There are like two big governmental entities working with innovation in Norway. And also I had a closed event and lunch with the Crown Prince of Norway. So I got to pitch our company
nice.
To the Crown Prince and like, you know, him showing interest in our company and asking more details. It was really rewarding. It was really nice.
I think that is a perfect note to end us on from the, you know, journey that you've described from, you know, starting university, a lot of competition in getting into pitching your company to the Crown Prince of Norway. I think that's one road, one journey to aspire to. Thank you so much, Mariam, for your time today and all the insights. It was a really interesting conversation. I really
enjoyed. Thank you. Thanks to you and also to the audience. Let's push together towards that better life for our next generation.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Have a nice day.